Well, if you want to change your world, you need to learn how to change your words. Today, we're starting this new series, and I want to talk about the weight of our words, because I believe that the words that we say have incredible power to influence our world, our relationships, our community, even our own inner life. Proverbs 18:21 says this, "Death and life are in the power of the tongue." Isn't that an incredible statement about just how powerful, how much of an impact, for better or for worse, death and life are in the power of the tongue? Which means that if we can get in control of our tongue, of what we say, then we can make a massive impact, a great influence for good. But if we can't, we are at great, great risk. Now, when we read that statement, and it's a profound statement to say that death and life are in the power of the tongue, it's hard to imagine putting that into stronger words, but I will bet that most of us pretty readily will agree with that statement. And here's how I know that this is a true statement, because I'm willing to bet that for most of us, there are a handful of words that have been said to you or about you that have had a massive impact on your life. Some of them were words that gave you incredible life. Some of them were words that wounded you very deeply. Maybe they were somewhat simple things that someone said to you. Perhaps at the time, even the person that said those words to you or about you didn't think much of them, didn't think that they would be a really big deal, wouldn't think that they would be something that you carry around, but they have stayed with you ever since. Maybe it was something about your appearance. Maybe it was something about your performance at school or at work. Maybe it was a name that they called you or a joke that they made. And again, maybe it was something that they didn't even think was a big deal. But in some cases, those words, even if they weren't meant to, stuck with you. And in some circumstances, they led to great pain, maybe ongoing insecurity or a lack of confidence. Then there were other words that were said to you that did the opposite. They encouraged you. They gave you confidence. They built you up. Some of you, for example, are in careers right now because in part of something that somebody saw in you and spoke out. Somebody that said, oh, I think you're really good at this. I think this is part of your personality. I think this is part of your gifting. I think you could really do a great job at this. Or they acknowledge you're already doing a great job at this. And part of why you are where you are today in a really good and positive way is because of things that somebody said to you. There are some words that we long to hear, and maybe we've heard them and maybe we haven't. Among those are some of the most popular, I love you, I'm proud of you, which coming from the right people mean the world to us. And we've experienced this through the words that have been said and weren't said to us by all kinds of people. And when it comes to our words, it's not only what is said to us that holds so much weight, but oftentimes it is who has said those things to us that carries so much weight. And so those words that have either brought life to us or have wounded us, brought death to us, sometimes have come from parents or a spouse, someone that you've loved, a close friend. From these people, oftentimes, those words that are so weighty can feel even heavier. And so, this statement from Proverbs 18 is so wise. Death and life are in the power of the tongue. Which means if we really think about it, if we want to change our world, if we want to change how we relate to other people, if we want to change the impact that we have on the people around us, we want to change how we think about the world and how we think about ourselves, we need to learn to change our words. They are so, so powerful. I want to work through a passage this morning that comes from James chapter 3. James is a book written by Jesus' brother or half-brother, James, who we don't find that during the life of Jesus, James doesn't pop up all that much in the Gospels. He's in there, but James really comes on the scene after the death and resurrection of Jesus. He becomes this very central figure in the early church and wrote what is a book named after him in the New Testament. It was a fairly general letter that was probably written to a number of churches, not just one specific church, but probably a whole bunch of churches to be read publicly, to be thought about deeply, and to be worked through in community, which makes it very appropriate for us to do the same or similar with it. So this passage comes from James chapter 3, and I'll start reading in verse 2. It says, "Indeed, we all make many mistakes. For if we could control our tongues, we would be perfect and could also control ourselves in every other way." In other words, it's a great place to start with some humility. We've all said things that we wish we had not said. What a good place to start with some humility. We all make many mistakes. We all make many mistakes in the way that we treat people, specifically here in the way that we talk to people. And then there's this incredible opportunity where he says, if we could control our tongues, and this is a huge statement, if we could control our tongues, we'd be perfect and we could also control ourselves in any other way. That means that James believes that the things that we say and our ability to say what we should say and our ability to hold back what we shouldn't say is so strong that if we had self-control in that area, if we could really hone in on being able to articulate and say what is good and healthy and life-giving to people and to avoid that which is what Proverbs calls death or what wounds people, hurts people, steals people's energy, if we could control that, we could actually be in control of all the other parts of us. Isn't that amazing? That this is, meaning, on one hand, one of the most difficult things for us to control. But if we could find a way to do it, then we would actually have the strength to be in control of all areas of our lives. What an incredible statement. Something for us to aspire to, a good reason for us to dive into this idea of how much our words weigh. He goes on, verse 3, and says, "We can make a large horse go wherever we want by means of a small bit in its mouth. And a small rudder makes a huge ship turn wherever the pilot chooses to go, even though winds are strong. In the same way, the tongue is a small thing that makes grand speeches." Okay, a couple of word pictures for us to be able to imagine so that we can try and figure out what James is trying to say. So he starts by talking about a large horse. You could lead a large horse wherever you want it to go by a small bit in its mouth. For me, the place where I really, the only place in my life where I interact with horses mostly, because it's not common for me, is at fall fairs. When there are fall fairs, have you ever experienced this? You go out and they've got these great horse shows. I love going to the horse shows. I love seeing these animals. Some of them I think of when I read this passage, I think of the big Clydesdale horses. You ever been around them? If you go to the fall fair, not only can you see them out when they do the different shows and stuff like that, but also if you go at the right time, when the horses, they've got them kind of behind the, you know, in the staging area and all that kind of stuff, you can often go right up to them, you can touch them, you can pet them, you can see them. And I love these big, huge, powerful, and beautiful horses. And when I walk up to them, some of these horses weigh over 1,000 pounds. They are so muscular, they are so powerful, they have been bred for that. I walk up to them and there is this moment of just a little bit of hesitation because I realize this horse is so big, it is so strong that if it decides to kind of go wild, if it could stomp me, it could walk over me. I go up to this horse and realize that I could push on it with all my might and I could make no difference in the direction that it's going. I would have no power against it. This horse is just so big. So strong, over 1,000 pounds, some of them, but with a bit. And if you know what you're doing, a bit that sometimes they weigh less than a pound, and you put them in the house, the mouth of a horse, and the bit, I don't understand all of it, but uses leverage and pressure points. And if you know what you're doing, you can put a bit in the mouth of a horse that big, and you can lead it exactly where you want it to go. And you have this comparison of this huge, massive, strong, powerful horse, and then you have this little tiny bit, and you say, if done right through leverage and pressure, with this bit, this massive, strong, powerful animal that could do whatever it wants to do, all of a sudden, you could lead it exactly where you want it to go. Similarly, second word picture. A small rudder makes a huge ship turn wherever the pilot chooses to go, even though the winds are strong. So picture a big boat. We have really big boats in our world now. James probably is picturing still a pretty big boat. I mean, we know they would have boats that were big enough to have maybe 200 people on it, sailing out in the sea. And again, picture if you wanted to move a boat that size, if you wanted it to turn one way or another. You might say one of the ways that a boat is going to get its direction, certainly, is by the wind through the sails. James talks about that. Even though there's great winds. So now picture that there's a boat and there's maybe even a huge windstorm and there's big waves and the wind is pushing on the sails and it's going to make sure it goes where it wants to go. And you might say, that's not the direction I want this boat to go. How would you turn that boat? How would you have the power to be able to make it go one way or another? Would you have the strength to be able to push the boat? Of course you wouldn't. And even if you did, where would you stand to push it one way or another? It's in the water. But if you have control over the rudder, compared to so many other parts of the boat, compared to the sails of the boat, which would be hugely visible, very big, would catch all the wind, compared to even the strength of the wind that you could feel at your back or in your face, maybe a storm coming on, you might not even think of it if it didn't come to your mind for one particular reason or another. But a rudder, which is so small, put strategically at the right place at the back of the boat, if you get control of the rudder, you could turn the entire ship around, even if the winds were blowing in one way or the next. A good pilot could get in control of the ship. James says, in the same way, the tongue is a small thing that makes grand speeches. Grand speeches, or another way of translating that would be big boasts. It makes huge claims about itself. The tongue is boasting, saying that if you can get control of the tongue, it's like getting control of a horse by a bit in its mouth. It's like getting control of a huge ship by being in control of its rudder. You could steer the entire thing. You could be so powerful, something that in other ways you would not be strong enough to do, you could accomplish if you could get in control of this small part of your body, your tongue, and what you say. How in control of your tongue, of your words, do you feel like you are? Think about that now. Are there times where you feel like, I don't have control of what I say? Goes on. But a tiny spark can set a great forest on fire. And among all the parts of the body, the tongue is a flame of fire. It is a whole world of wickedness, corrupting your entire body. It can set your whole life on fire, for it is set on fire by hell itself. So now we come with some negative side of the imagery. We've talked about, wouldn't it be great if you could steer a horse by this little bit? Wouldn't it be great if you could get in control of a ship by this little rudder? But your tongue, if you're not careful, can set your whole world on fire, like a forest fire. This summer, like many others here in Canada, we have forest fires that are raging, that have engulfed thousands of hectares of forest. It's been devastating. Some of those, if you do a little bit of research and you say, how did these fires start? What happened? Part of it is because the conditions are right, because forests are dry, because it's hot, because of the time of year. But then there's some kind of little trigger. Sometimes it's a really big deal, something really noticeable. There's a lightning strike at a certain part, and because the conditions are right, something sets on fire. Other times, it's fairly small things. Maybe it's a spark from equipment of somebody that's working. Maybe it's a careless moment, like a cigarette tossed out a window or a campfire that's not properly extinguished. But these even sometimes tiny sparks that seem insignificant on their own. You see, it's just this little thing. It doesn't matter. All of a sudden can grow and pick up. And because the conditions are right, entire forests can go up in flames. That thousands and thousands and thousands of acres can be scorched. That because of that, if you look at the effect of it, thousands of people have been evacuated from their homes, wildlife displaced, that the thick smoke doesn't just stay right over top of the fire, but the smoke sometimes multiple provinces away from us hovers over us and invades our air and not only here in Canada, but places in the United States and other places around the world. The smoke has come to their cities. There have been schools that have been closed, flights that have been grounded, people who have been thousands of kilometers away from the actual fire that end up coughing because of the air that is polluted by the smoke. All that sometimes started from something that is very small, the proper conditions and a little spark. Your words, my words, have the power to change our world. They can change our relationships. They can change our mood and our attitude. They can change our outlook. They can change other people's lives. And James is trying to help us see that if you're not paying attention to the things that you're saying, and if you lose control of the things that you're saying, you should be warned that there could be grave consequences, that little tiny words that you don't think matter much or you don't even think that much of could grow and have a huge effect, not only on you, but on so many other people. It says, among the body, the tongue is a flame of fire. It's a world of wickedness. Potentially it is. Can corrupt your entire body. It can set your whole life on fire, for it is set on fire by hell itself. Now, this word hell, I know many of us have certain connotations when we read that word in Greek. In the New Testament, wherever you see the word hell, it actually comes from the word Gehenna. And Gehenna means, very literally, the Valley of Hinnom. In Greek, the Valley of Hinnom is a place still today just outside of the city of Jerusalem. Today, you can find pictures of it. There's actually some very beautiful, this valley, some beautiful gardens there, but it's just on the outskirts of Jerusalem. And in the time of Jesus, and then in the time of kind of the early church when some of these letters were written, the Valley of Hinnom was a place that it often, one of the reasons it gets translated hell is because it gets associated with the idea of judgment. So one of the things that existed in the Valley of Hinnom was a big garbage dump. This is where they kind of take out the garbage from the city and they would burn it. And in some writings we read that it's always burning. There's garbage out there. It's always burning. And so there was this connotation of this is where our waste goes. This is where our garbage goes. We set it on fire. Some have noted even that if you weren't wealthy and someone in your family passed away and you didn't have the money to give them a proper burial, it's possible that corpses would be taken out here and would be burned. And so the connotation here is an ugly one. And it gets associated with judgment because the idea is this is where the trash goes and we burn it up. And we've all got trash in our life. We've all got things inside of us. This is the association with judgment that need to be purified, that need to be got rid of, that we need to throw out and make sure aren't part of our life anymore. And so James picks up on that, talks about Gehenna here, and probably wants us to think about the areas of garbage in our own life that maybe is giving rise to some of the not so great things that we say, setting fire to our tongue. Maybe that's something like jealousy or discontentment or bitterness or anger or pessimism. Things that reside in our lives that really need to go to the garbage dump, but if we're not careful, they can start a fire in us. They can set on fire our tongues. And as we've already read, our tongues, even though they're little, could start a huge fire in our lives, could start huge discord in our families or in our friendships, could change the way people think about other people, and so on and so on and so on. Verse 7 says, we're still talking about that tension between trying to get in control of our tongues. People can tame all kinds of animals, birds, reptiles, and fish, but no one can tame the tongue. It is restless and evil, full of deadly poison. Sometimes it praises our Lord and Father, and sometimes it curses those who have been made in the image of God. Now, this is a little interesting section because there's a few things that are mentioned that if you're like a really keen Bible reader, you might notice. There is this mention of all of these animals that people are supposed to be able to tame, animals, birds, reptiles, and fish. This is an allusion, I believe, to Genesis chapter 1. In Genesis chapter 1, you have this very poetic story about God's creation. And what you notice is when this creation is described, when God is bringing order to things and bringing it into existence, a lot of these things that are mentioned, like animals, some of them that fly, some of them that are reptiles, and some of them are fish, that are all mentioned specifically in Genesis chapter 1. How does God do that? There's this poetic way of us imagining how God does that. It says that God said, and God said, let there be, and there was. And God creates all sorts of things in Genesis 1. And what is that supposed to conjure up in us? What are we supposed to think about when we read that it's God's word that brings things into existence? It speaks to his creative initiative, his creative will, that what he wants, he speaks, and it comes to pass. And then one of the things that we find out is God creates throughout Genesis 1, the climax of creation, he creates human beings. He says they're very good. And then all of these other animals that he had created, he gives dominion to the human beings. That means he gives responsibility for them to care for and to cultivate all that God has created. And so here we have a reference to that. That's part of the job of humanity. We're supposed to take good care of all that God has created. And it's amazing to see the kind of things that we can do that actually help us, that actually put on display that we can tame all kinds of animals. I'm not going to get into this, but just look on YouTube all the ways we can tame animals. We can teach dogs how to skateboard. It's incredible. Go look at all the things we can get animals to do. Yeah, we can do that. But what about our own tongues? It comes down to another reference to Genesis chapter 1. It says about our tongues that sometimes our tongues praise the Lord and Father, and sometimes it curses those who have been made in the image of God. When God created human beings in Genesis 1, it said that he created human beings in the image of God to be like God, to be a visible manifestation in some ways of the characters and the characteristics of who God is. And he's saying here, you know, some of us, we have gotten really good at taming animals, which we were supposed to do. We taught dogs how to skateboard. It's absolutely incredible. Good for you. Way to go. And yet we still struggle with our tongues. We still struggle with what we say. And there's this tension and contradiction in our life where on the one hand, you could be here today, this morning, you could be watching along, we could be singing songs, and we could be praising God our Father. And then before we get home in the car, we could be cursing our family members. We could be saying destructive things, speaking bad things into our life. We could be yelling at each other. We could be saying negative things that instead of giving life to others, actually wound them and take life from them. We could be discouraging people. We could be slandering them. We could be lying about them. And if we went back to the beginning of where we were reading, we say we all make mistakes, don't we? That you're probably sitting here now and saying, I've done that. I've done that recently. There's areas in my life where I don't feel like I'm controlling my tongue. I might be, fill in the other thing that you might feel like you're in control in your life. Man, I'm doing really well at work. I'm doing really good with my exercise routine. I'm doing really well in my financial life. You might have a whole bunch of things in order, but what about your tongue? Have you disciplined your tongue in the things that you say? Verse 10, so blessing and cursing come pouring out of the same mouth. Surely, brothers and sisters, this is not right. So let's just name another contradiction here. Does a spring of water bubble out with both fresh water and bitter water? The answer there is no. Either you've got fresh water or you've got bitter water, but you can't have both. So how is it that we could bless and curse? Attention ought not to be there. Another example. Does a fig tree produce olives? Or a grapevine produce figs? No. And you can't draw fresh water from a salty spring. Again, if you go to a certain kind of tree, if you've got a tree that produces olives, it's an olive tree. If you've got a grapevine, it produces grapes. That from the source and from the core of what something is the fruit that it produces. I don't think for James, first and foremost, this is a moral command. He actually, at this point, isn't telling us what we should or shouldn't do. I think this is a moment for us first just to evaluate, just to name what is true, just to notice where in our lives there might be tensions that ought not to be there, where there's a contradiction, to say, how is it that I could say one thing on Sunday morning at church? How could I sing this? And then say something else to somebody else and have such a contradiction. James here is picking up something that Jesus taught. Jesus in Matthew chapter 12, he said this, very similar to what James is writing. A good person produces good things from the treasury of a good heart, and an evil person produces evil things from the treasury of an evil heart. And I tell you this, you must give an account on judgment day for every idle word you speak. The words you say will either acquit you or condemn you. He's saying the same thing that Paul is saying when, or James is saying, pardon me, when he talks about the different trees or the different springs. He's talking about where is it that our words really come from? And this is important for us to notice, because you have to ask yourself, how will we get in control of our tongues unless we know where what our tongues are saying? What's the source of what we are saying? In other words, what you say says a lot about you. Think about that. Let's just be honest about it. Jesus being very clear, a good person produces good things, where? From the treasury of a good heart. And then the flip side is true as well. Which means, have you ever said this? Have you ever said something, maybe you didn't think it through. It just kind of flew off your tongue. And have you ever said, ooh, that just slipped out? It's a really interesting phrase, isn't it? That just slipped out. Maybe it's a word you're not supposed to say. Maybe it's a word you're definitely not supposed to say in front of your kids. Maybe it was something that as soon as you said it, you went, oh, that was mean, or that was not true. You say, ooh, it just slipped out. Very interesting. What does it mean if a word slipped out about what's already within you? That's what Jesus is saying. Our words aren't just simply out here. They come from inside of us. They slip out because they're already within us. What you say says a lot about you. What you say says a lot about what's going on inside of your heart, what's going on inside of your mind, which means if we're going to try and control our tongue, it can't just be about, I'm going to try not to say certain things. We must go deeper to address our hearts, what's inside of us. Perhaps there are things that we need to surrender to God. Perhaps there are things we need to work through with a good friend or a counselor. Here's what I would love for you to do this week. It's just an application point, something that all of us could work on. And we've got 3 weeks in this series, so we're going to get into more specifics. This week, I'm not telling you anything about what you should say or what you should not say. All I'm suggesting that you do for the next week is monitor your speech this week and ask yourself this question. What does what I say about me? Just think about it. Think about the things that you've said in a day. Maybe plan a certain point, maybe it's around dinner time or before bedtime, where you stop. Perhaps you even journal about it, and you just ask yourself, today, what does what I have said say about me? And probably what you're going to find is that there's a bit of a contradiction in your life, that there are some things that you say, man, I encouraged somebody. That was really good. I was so happy for them, and I was able to share a nice word of encouragement and push them forward. That was great. I had a great conversation with so-and-so, and I feel like, man, that was such a good thing to say. And then you're going to find, oh, it slipped out. Something slipped out. Oh, I didn't have control here. Oh, there was that thing. I got angry, and I said something that I should not have said, and just monitor it, and just jot some of those things down. Maybe look over the next week for patterns. Are there certain patterns of what my speech is on a positive side and on a negative side, on a healthy side and an unhealthy side? Just monitor your speech and ask yourself, what does what you say about you? Because especially when things aren't so good, here's what we're tempted to do. We say something, we go, oh, that slipped out, or oh, I didn't mean that. But it just came out. We want to say, well, why did that happen? Where did it come from? And typically we want to say, oh, it's because I was stressed out. You say something to somebody and you go, oh, I know that was hurtful, and you come back and you say, I'm sorry, I'm just so stressed out today. Or maybe your kids are just pushing your buttons and pushing you to the edge and you're just so frustrated. You say something and you go, I wouldn't have normally said that, but man, they're just driving me crazy today. Maybe there's somebody else at work and they're bothering you over and over and over, and you've got to focus and you've got deadlines and you've got things to do, and they keep interrupting you, and finally you lashed out and you said, well, if they weren't bugging me so much. And what we like to do is say that there are all these things out there that are causing us to say these things. And I get those are all triggers. It's not that there's not some truth to the fact that if we weren't stressed out by some of these things, if we weren't pushed, if we weren't provoked or aggravated, we wouldn't have said those things. But what James is telling us and what Jesus taught us was you might have those triggers in your life that bring something out, but if something's coming out, it's because it's already inside of you. So yeah, maybe there's some triggers of why I said that, but deep down, to take what Jesus and Paul said, listen, to ask yourself, what's the spring from which the water of your words are flowing from? What's going on in your heart that are giving rise to your speech? And just jot them down, look for some themes, and we'll continue to work as we work through this series on what to do about it. But here's why this is so important. Because when you change your heart, if this is right, then you can change your words. And when you change your words, you can change your world. Think about this. Think about things that you think you have no power to do. I don't think I'm influential. I don't think I have an impact on other people's lives. I don't think I could change anything in the culture of our community or our city. I don't think that I'm a big deal. And yet, our words that seem sometimes insignificant are little sparks that could become huge fires. So that could be very negative, but it could be so positive. You could come up to a horse that you think, I am so much weaker than this horse. I'd never move this horse. Strategically find a way to guide it. You could look at a ship and say, there's no way I could move that ship, but if you could strategically get a hold of its rudder, you could change the direction in which it's going. And the same is true for our lives and our relationships and our community and our world, that if we could get control of our words, if we could change our words by allowing God to change our hearts, we could change our world. So Heavenly Father, I ask you that today you would illuminate for us not only the things that we say, but the reason that we say them. Would you help us to be introspective about what's in our hearts and what's in our minds? God, I pray that you would help us to surrender the things that ought not to be there as we recognize when we speak words that flow from your presence and love in our lives and when we speak words that come from perhaps our own insecurities or our fears or our struggles, or some of the garbage that's in our lives. God, we thank you for the word, Jesus, your creative influence in this world, seen in a person, Jesus. And we pray that as we take in his love for us and his grace, that our hearts would be on an ongoing basis, would be transforming to be more like him. And the result, our tongues would speak the things that he might speak and that we might see your creative will continue to build your kingdom in the world all around us. In Jesus' name.